morning, Commissioners. I'm Paul Stadler, representing now.
Thank you. We're here today to discuss in a work session the proposed amendments to Clark County Code Title 8, which is the animal code. I had come to you previously during board time to discuss some of the highlights of what we're asking for. Today I have with me Officer Tricia Kraft. I have Dr. Liz Grauer, who is a veterinarian in the community, and on the end of the table, Cindy Frankie, who is with Dogpaw. Both happen to be members of the Animal Advisory Board, which is why they're here today, because any amendments to county or city code, we work through the advisory board first. So they're here to either answer questions or nod as I tell them to. All right. So I'm willing to proceed however you would like. We can again go back and talk about the highlights. We can go line by line, or if you just have individual questions because you've had weeks to review this.
What I would like to request, having just seen this for the first time, that you give us some highlights and directions and give us time to take a look at. I was just trying to make sense of the very first line where it scratches out animal protection and control, and then put back animal protection and control. You strike it out, put back the same thing. So the first line, I'm confused.
There is quite a bit of red ink on this document. It's my understanding that it is available out on the grid for people to review as well. So you can see there that there is a great deal of red ink that really has to do with changing lowercase to uppercase and an and to an ampersand and lots of clerical cleanup. To go back to your other question, Counselor, on the highlights, I would direct you to page 6. I want to make sure that's the same on your document as mine. Yes. So page 6 is a section of new code we're proposing. It's language we borrowed from King County, and it provides animal control the opportunity to augment their revenue either through products that are sold or advertising that we contract with a particular clientele, and we'll be having fresh revenue finding its way into the animal control fund. So that's the first highlight. The second highlight would be on page 9. Sorry, I'm speaking to the microphone. At the bottom of the page. And that is where we're asking to strike the language where currently we allow a 100% discount for someone claiming their animal is a service animal. As we discussed during board time, this has proven to be a little bit sticky for us given the American Disabilities Act and the fact that you can go out onto the internet and within a matter of minutes download a certificate that says your animal is in fact a service animal. I make sure that I speak individually to each person who makes this request, and I'm quite certain that I can give them a discount a different way, either through low income or through a senior discount that's already provided. We're fearful that this is being abused.
I'm sorry. Page 9.
Yes.
What section?
The very bottom, it's highlighted in pink and then red line where it says no license fee shall be charged to an owner who is legally blind and keeps going. Yes, right.
Okay, so I see that's stricken. What are we adding instead?
We're not. We're just removing the discount given to those people claiming a service animal. The language is already in the code that provides for a low income and for a senior discount. That's already in the code. I'm not suggesting we change that.
I see.
The next one. Would be on page 21.
I turned the page and I'm seeing on page 10 down at the bottom. A new section also. So is there a difference between a red underlined area or a red highlighted area?
Yes, I'm afraid that the Microsoft Word, when you go into the show update modes, it depends on who touches it. It assigns each new person that touches it a different color scheme. So in the end, you wind up with quite the rainbow of colors, but it's still strike through is being removed and underlined is an addition.
So the highlighting is the same as if it was underlined red or blue?
Yes, disregard the highlight color.
But tell me what this means. Number 8, licenses purchased online may incur a transaction fee. So if someone uses a credit card, if we process that, we pay a fee for that processing. And I know we had this conversation before, and we don't want to have to take a discount on a processing.
Correct. So the way that the website is set up, it's pretty early on in the transaction, it warns you that there is a transaction fee that's going to be charged you. And I believe it's either $2.50 or $2. So it's not a lot. It's less than the $5 that you would pay through an agent fee that we allow for veterinarians or auto licensing shops. And price of gas these days. The $2 is not something we can negotiate with the Visa credit card banking industry. So you're right, we don't want to cut into our revenue, so we pass that cost along to the customer.
And is the fee that we charge for online far in excess of what the discount is?
That's a good question. So I'll just break down costs for you. Let's start with the dog. An unaltered dog is $40. An altered dog is $16. So obviously there's some incentive there to alter your dog. But then it would be $2.50 or $2 on top of the $16. If you have an altered dog and you're a senior citizen, we take 50% off of that. So $8. So then the $2.50, it's getting there, but it's still it is much more convenient for people. We're seeing a good deal of our renewal traffic move to the web. So we're processing less checks in the office, which saves us some time as well. We hear some. I will say I've had 3 phone calls or 3 emails, and it's been almost 6 months now that we've implemented this program. I think it's just a normal expectation by the online sales market that there's going to be some sort of a fee. So I don't think that, Councillor Milky, you were referring to anything specific on page 10.
No,
you were just...
I'm getting caught up quickly.
Thank you. All right. Okay, so 9, I believe I said it was 21, is the rabies vaccination reporting. So recently, the state legislature enacted 2 laws, and I have them both here with me. Well, I should say they enacted 1, and it kind of triggers another. So, if you look at WAC 246-933-320, it discussed that every veterinarian shall keep daily records of animals that they treat. I don't believe that's new. And then further down in Section 9, it says, when requested by the owner or authorized agent, and I'll raise my hand saying that we are an authorized agent, according to my attorney, copies of records will be made available as promptly as required by medical necessity or public health circumstances. And the public health circumstances is the one that we're triggering off of. So if you go to the newer law, WAC 246-100-197, titled Rabies, Measures to Prevent Human Disease, and you go down to number 3, an owner of a dog, cat, or ferret shall have it vaccinated against rabies and revaccinated following veterinarian vaccine manufacturer instructions. This requirement does not apply to animal shelters. So that is the new law that there used to be an exemption given if you felt as though you had, well, maybe I should have my vet comment on that, but there was an exception where if you felt as though the rabies vaccine would cause harm to your animal, then your veterinarian could allow you to opt out of vaccination.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so that has now been stricken, and no matter what, all dogs, cats, and ferrets must be vaccinated against rabies. So we're taking both of those and saying we would like to receive notification from the veterinarians in the community as to which animals are being vaccinated, and then we would create our own home-based database and be able to readily access that. And I have written down some advantages as to why this comprehensive list with that would be an advantage to our fingertips. In certain instances, we may be able to avoid quarantines, and a quarantine is a mandatory 10-day, just what it says, a quarantine, which is somewhat onerous on either the owner, or we have to take the dog to the shelter and keep it housed there as well. So we could perhaps avoid a quarantine if we could prove immediately that the dog has been vaccinated. I shouldn't keep saying dog, the animal has been vaccinated. The victim would know right away whether to begin post-exposure injections. But the owner of the animal rarely knows or gets the dates correct. They just don't keep those sort of records, but we would have it on our tablets in the field immediately at our fingertips. It avoids having to call veterinarians directly, which we believe we do somewhere between 5 and 10 times per week. Obviously, we could then turn around and use this information for licensing compliance, because we could compare the data being received from the veterinarians against our licensing database, and if we find that there are those who are not licensed, we could reach out to those people. And it increases pet returns to owners without the aid of the shelter.
So, Paul,
yes.
Do pet owners have a shot card? Remember, parents and children need to have a shot card.
No.
So, pet owners don't have a shot card.
No.
So, for example, I'm a little bit afraid of an unfunded mandate upon the veterinarian. So, they treat a dog, they give shots to the dog, they're supposed to report that to the county. And they're not being paid for that.
So there is a WAC, 246.08400, which provides for a charge for searching and duplicating health care records. And I don't have it here with me, but it's
okay.
Something like a dollar.
So they
per,
could, they could add
they can charge us for that.
Or whatever to that fee to pay for their services to notify the county.
They would send along, let's say, 100 treatments, inoculations to us, and if they so chose, they could charge us $100 for those 100 documents.
They'd charge us?
Yes.
Not the dog owner.
Well, I'm the one requesting the information, not the dog owner, so I would be billed for that. The idea, though, is that I would then turn around and use that information to perhaps garner more licensing revenue. And we would net out a positive balance on that transaction.
If I may address that a little bit, most veterinarians now use software to itemize and invoice, even if they're not documenting records on their computer, they are still invoicing on computer. It would take probably 30 seconds at the end of each day to print out a report specific to rabies vaccines and another 30 seconds to fax it to the county. So the actual outlay of labor and expense to the veterinarian is going to be very minimal.
That's kind of what my IRS accountant told me, that everyone could just add it on in just a couple seconds. When we got all done, I gave my accountant $300 for my taxes. So, but it might look small at the beginning, by the time you add up all the other requirements, the license available at the veterinarian, I think we talked about that also. So I'm just concerned, and I want to be careful, that we don't put more undue burden on veterinarians for something that's beneficial to us, and then somehow we're going to pick up the cost and it's going to neutralize out somewhere.
We're very aware that the veterinarians provide an invaluable service and that they're part of the solution that we are as well. So we're stepping delicately as well.
So there is provision for the vets to charge the county if they want to. Have they very much done so in the past?
No. No. But we're only going out 5 or 10 times a week, and certainly not always the same vet. There's how many vets in town? 40, 50.
It's since there's software that the vets use to record and track that, their own database, is there some kind of a standardized format that can be electronically imported into our county records rather than using mention of fax? That sounds like manual on our side. We're physically typing it and we read.
It's everybody tends to use different softwares. So no, probably not. Some of them will print out things in Excel format, which might be able to be incorporated into yours, but it's probably going to involve a lot more labor on the county side than on the veterinary side. And just to address the increase of cost, number one, receptionists get paid a lot less than accountants do. And number two, if a veterinarian or clinic is being called and receptionist spending 5 minutes once a week working on the phone looking up records for animal control, the amount of labor that they actually contribute, if those calls were diminished by this process, would actually be less than what they're doing right now.
If
finding lost charts is very time consuming process.
So the effect of this is if you're a conscientious pet owner and you want your animal cared for and you want them to have rabies protection for them and for your family and the community, you will get transmitted to the county. And then they'll be calling you up saying, hey, man, where's your dog license? Right?
Yes, that's the idea, is that we would turn around and use that information.
So it'll mean that I can't have a dog off the grid because he'll get on the grid the minute I take care of him medically.
No, it will be when you get vaccinated for rabies.
Well, yeah, that's what
only
I mean.
Only rabies. And that's once every 3 years for most adult dogs.
Well, and I'm not advocating, avoiding the law. I'm just too many grids. I worry about too many grids.
Part of the struggle animal control has had, and I believe it's probably a national issue, is funding. We're not very good at marketing what it is that we do. So a lot of people just don't understand that pet licenses are mandatory and have been on the books for decades. So this is a means by which we can touch those people. Councillor Madore brought up a question about integrating the data. You're all three aware that the community development of which animal control is a part is moving forward with the Computronics database solution, I'll call it. The vendor is very excited about the animal control world because they haven't done that yet. So they're very excited about giving, I'll say me, because I'm the one with all the ideas, everything that I want and that my staff have dreamed up as well. One of them is this integration of data that comes from a third-party vendor electronically, literally daily. And we are hands off from having to handle that at all.
Automated.
Correct. So I believe that is coming. We're not there yet, and it would probably require some effort and thus expense on animal control's part to go visit each of those veterinarians and work with them and with their IT person and our IT person to get those two databases to communicate. But we do know that technology is coming.
So How do we handle someone? I've known lots of people that do dog rescue, and they do it through networks. And I know that Clark County and Portland have a network. So if someone has a dog, and I had a neighbor that would do this, she'd take a problematic dog that was going to get put down because it just had some terrible behavior, and she would take that dog and work with it and work with it and work with it. Now, it wasn't her dog, it was never going to be her dog, and she had a whole many different dogs over a few years. how, and she's the kind of a person that if she didn't know the dog had rabies vaccine, she would have taken it at her own cost to take care of all that. But that, how does, then if you contact her about licensing that dog, she might have two dogs since then. How do we handle that?
It does state in the WAC that animal shelters are exempt from the reporting of those diseases right away, because we realize that there is a gap there.
It's a transitory ownership.
But once the animal is in its forever home, then they are required to be vaccinated for rabies by law, Washington state law.
But sometimes these dogs have sketchy histories, so we don't always know.
Hopefully, if the dog has a very sketchy history and it has been labeled dangerous, then that's, I know that's not what you're speaking to in this particular instance, but it does occur where in Clark County, if we label a dog dangerous and the person doesn't want to put it down, but doesn't also want to go through the process of the liability and whatnot of continuing ownership of the animal, they do have the option of transferring it out of the county. But then they are also obliged to announce to the jurisdiction they're going that this animal is arriving and it has this label.
And my neighbor didn't have any dogs that had those problems, but it was like a miracle. Some people actually can cause correction. They can work with an animal. This woman was like a one-person miracle. So, but somebody who's doing a good deed.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm fostering right now. So when you foster, yes. Same thing, we don't have any vaccination history. We've had to get rabies shot recently for a foster who's on her way to moving to an adopted home.
I see. Okay.
It could benefit as well if the animal was surrendered to the Humane Society and we knew the address that the animal was surrendered from. Oftentimes people don't realize or don't know when their vaccines were given, and they don't provide that information to the shelter when surrendering an animal. So if we were able to look up the address, and we would be able to know right away that that animal in fact had been vaccinated and was current, which may avoid a duplicate injection, you know, because they're good for 3 years routinely. So it might eliminate some of that concern as well.
Thank you. And I know this is a unique situation. And
well,
thanks
there's
for
lots of rescuers all over.
There are lots of
rescuers. Yeah, I just didn't do it myself, so I'm very familiar with the process.
So, on those dogs there, for animals, aren't they vaccinated fully? Further put out to the
doctor. It depends on who's doing it. If it's a private rescue organization, they usually get them either not current on vaccines or without records of vaccines. If they go to the shelter, they pretty much get everything that they need there. So it just depends on where they come from. But again, with the officers and Animal Control being aware of rescue organizations as rescue organizations, there's some flexibility in there just because we're still a small community and able to work with individuals as well.
It seems to me that it would be very hard to distinguish which dog has been vaccinated and which one hasn't. For example, if an individual has one dog and has been vaccinated and then they acquire a second dog of the same type and the dog bit somebody, how do you know which dog of the same type is the one that was vaccinated and the one that wasn't?
You are correct. We do run across cases like that, and we have lost.
Go ahead. One that this is. It was not uncommon at all as children that we had a shot card. And for each child, you have a shot card. And I had one in the military, too. So you went someplace, it was either in your records or you had it on your person. So, for example, if my dog went out, bit somebody, and the animal control comes out, and whatnot, I could present at that time, right, the proof that dog identification was
we wouldn't be able to use that as an exact. We would still have to contact the veterinarian directly and verify, in fact, that it was that specific animal. So just because they had a shot card, anyone can fill those out just like a child's immunization card.
I understand that, but you should have something to go by. You'd have a veterinarian who they claim gave the shot. Before that, you might not.
That's the whole point of sending this information to animal control ahead of time, is that we will have that information on record.
So the records say a black Labrador got a shot.
A rabies shot specifically. Veterinarians are good at documenting which animal, the age, microchip number of the animal's microchip. We have records and we know our patients. And so if there's any confusion, they would be able to come to us and say, is this the dog that you vaccinated?
Yeah, not to all microchip.
If they were all microchip, that'd be ideal. But not everybody wants to do that either. So it's just, if someone is deliberately trying to deceive, there are steps that have to be taken to try and get to the bottom of that. But that's not the norm for most people.
Right. I have two questions. One, now that the process of reporting rabies shots is mandatory, it's automatically going to happen. Up to this point, it has not been mandatory, and if I understand correctly. And so I assume that it's been a regular routine that your office would contact each of the vets and ask them for their records. Is that correct?
That will become the routine.
So the asking or the automatic reporting?
Well, we don't ask for it currently. Only in cases where there is a bite.
Okay.
So that, sorry, maybe I wasn't clear on that. There's 5 to 10 bites per week. So during those cases, we try to contact if the vet is known. So yes, that phone call is automatic, but only after the bite occurs. We're not asking for their complete set of data currently.
Okay. So up to this point, it's only been bite by bite basis, as needed basis. And after this kicks in, then there will be an automatic, your database will just fill up and you'll have records on every rabies shot.
Correct.
Okay. From the future, from now forward.
Once we adopt this, right?
Yes.
And the adoption, we're thinking that this takes effect as soon as we...
Well, there has to be a public hearing, of course, and on all of that we're asking for today. So however long that process takes, and then the days thereafter. You all are also the Clark County Board of Health, and there might be some advantage to us having this move forward through that body as well, because then I don't have to go to every jurisdiction that we work with and ask for this over and over and over again. Since the Board of Health has corner-to-corner jurisdiction, it might be wise for us to have this discussion with you in that forum as well.
In addition, because I assume that we could adopt this code as the Board of Health and instead of just simply the BOCC.
I believe that's correct, yes. Rather than duplicating the proceeding.
Okay. Well, for streamlining the process.
Well, how many jurisdictions? So you need to go to every city?
Well, correct. So currently we provide service to the town of Yakult and the city of Vancouver. So Camas, Washougal, Richfield, La Center, well, we basically take care of La Center, and Battleground are on their own. So our idea is that we would then take that information and give that file to each of those jurisdictions, and they could do with it as they please. So for instance, Battleground, city limits.
Yeah.
I don't run my trucks through that jurisdiction. I run my trucks through that jurisdiction, but I can't do anything. So if a set of data comes in from a veterinarian that includes homeowners within the jurisdiction of Battleground, I would parse that out and give that to Battleground PD, who could then choose to contact that owner or not. But I would still have the rabies database information.
Do you do bite reports even if it's the city of Battleground?
The way that I'm going to answer that is bites occur everywhere from dogs that are owned everywhere. If the bite occurs inside the city limits of Battleground and is a Battleground dog, then no. But if it's a dog visiting Battleground Lake that's a Battleground dog, then yes.
No.
I didn't mean to, I meant Louisville Park because that's in the county, not
so
Battleground Lake.
We don't have agreements with all the cities.
I would love to very much provide a regional service. I think that that's a wise move. We could have it all under one administrative blanket. Citizens are confused. We get dozens of phone calls each day for people asking for our service that we can't provide them because even though we're known as animal control, we're not everybody's animal control.
This is really raising a broader question that I was unaware of. So, why do we not have an agreement with Battleground? Do they decline the invitation, or have we not traditionally done it?
I'll say we have been lacking in our ability to reach out to them, simply because my staff is spread thin, myself included. So we are hopeful, we have been hopeful, that not only with the implementation of mandatory reporting, but our uptick in revenues via the online licensing program, that we could go to them with a carrot that says, look, we think that we can do this service for you, I'm going to say for no cost, simply because then their licensing revenue would jump as well that could pay for our services. Battleground has worked through their police department. They have a part-time person that does the job. Kamiswashugal actually has two dedicated individuals. Richfield works through their police department, as does La Center. I don't know that any of them other than the two in Kamiswashugal really want to do it. I think they prefer that we did do it, but the cost is perhaps prohibitive at this point.
So, do they license dogs in City of Battleground by City of Battleground?
Correct. All dogs, no matter the jurisdiction you reside in, the county must be licensed. All jurisdictions have a dog licensing law. Let me say that again.
Do you manage
no.
the dog license?
No.
Okay.
Clark County Animal Protection and Control handles unincorporated Clark County, the town of Yackel, and the city of Vancouver. We are far and away the largest provider and license issuer, but we do not license cats or dogs outside of those jurisdictions.
Okay, that part of this discussion I want to think about because it seems inefficient, and yet we don't want to start claiming authority over jurisdictions that aren't interested.
Understood.
But this has to be a big complication for our animal control in the confusion of who people call. And
we spend a lot of time with customers that we can't help.
Yeah. Okay. So that's just some good information in the big picture.
Speaking of a complication, if we, let's say for instance, you pick up a dog, it's a dog bite in Louisville Park, the dog's not licensed, the owner lives in Battleground, do our penalties apply? Does your staff get reimbursed for the extra effort it takes to be able to take care of that?
If we can identify who the owner is, you said it was not licensed, but it might have a microchip or other identification on it. Our first step is to try to contact the owner right then and there. If we are unsuccessful, if either the identification is not available or the identification doesn't lead us anywhere, then the animal does find its way to the shelter. At the shelter, then the owner hopefully comes and redeems it, at which time they have to license their animal, either with us or with whatever jurisdiction they're from. And they have to pay all of the different fees that the shelter, there's an intake fee, there's a boarding fee, and if one of my trucks brings it in, then there's a transport fee. There's no penalty at that point. No citation is given either for licensing or for running at large, unless we have face-to-face contact with the person. We're now down the road onto the next call, and the shelter doesn't write citations on our behalf. Does that answer your question?
However, if it was a dog bite, they would be quarantined at the shelter until we could contact the owner. If it had identification or we had some information available, we would pass that on to the shelter as far as vaccinations or owner information. But any enforcement done is jurisdictional, so we would do any enforcement that would be required once an owner was located. If an owner was not located, well, typically we put the animals on investigative hold when they get to the Humane Society. That way, if an owner comes to claim the dog, we're contacted and we could continue the quarantine or pass it on to the jurisdiction in which they're located. So if it was a dog lived in city limits of Battleground but it bit in Louisville Park, then we would say the dog is continued on the rabies quarantine until this date, which is usually 10 days from the date of the bite.
I believe you're driving at the question as to whether or not we are a regional provider, if it would simplify not only operations but the citizens' side of the house, and I believe the answer is obviously yes.
Can be simplified.
Yes.
I think that's my point.
I have a vision of getting there at some point, but there are steps that we're taking along the way, and a lot of that has to do with getting our ship in top shape as well.
So the path forward on that would be your initiative if you can find the bag?
Correct.
Okay. Is there anything we can do to help you?
I'd like to leave that question on the table, if I may.
Take a rain check? Okay, next question. Yeah, if, let's say, a dog gets reported, here's a rabies shot, it wasn't licensed. We discover that it should be been licensed. So it's a $100 penalty if it's the first one. And then they have a 10-day period that will be waived if they license the animal, correct?
That is correct.
And I assume that licensing the animal is less costly than the penalty, so they would naturally, your experience so far is that they always end up licensing, right?
Yes. About 5-6 years ago when you were on city, we changed our penalties from a $25 penalty to a $100 penalty. To license, obviously, an alter dog at $16 is far more financially favorable than paying the $100 fine. We saw a tremendous jump in our, we got a lot of press as well, but we saw a tremendous jump in our compliance because of that. It was only penalizing those that weren't in compliance, it wasn't penalizing those that were.
So that first call to the owner, they're presented with that choice, pick one, $100 or... Okay.
Right.
All right. How do our fees compare to our license fees compare to the other jurisdictions?
Okay. The simple answer is we're at the low end of the average.
Really?
Do you want more information than I give you?
No.
Actuals? But we're at the low end of the average. So there's a band in the middle. We're not the high, we're not the low, but we're at the low end of the average. And that's comparing to like Multnomah, Spokane, King, Seattle,
Washington.
Well,
I mean, compared to
Washington.
The other jurisdictions within Clark County?
Camas Washougal has a unique situation where they charge, I believe it's $25, and it's a one-time lifetime.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't know how they balance their books with that, but and they don't license cats either.
And this is an annual license for that ours is?
Clark County Animal Control is an annual license, yes. Although we are asking for a provision here in today's request to allow for multiple years.
That was my next question. So if they wanted to say, I want to go through this once and so can I sign up for 3 years? They can do, we can't now, but you're working on it.
Correct. That's what we're asking. Yes. Well, we want to have it on the code, and then we will make the alterations to the online section of licensing and make that available there as well.
Okay.
Anything beyond three, we run the risk of the animal not surviving that duration, and then people want refunds, and that's just a struggle.
My question, if I buy a three-year license, my dog dies next week, I don't get refunds.
No, sorry. Thank you for your donation.
Take it to the vet and say, does this dog have 3 good years?
So I have another question. We talked briefly here about running part of this through the county health department. The county health department regulations are county-wide to include inside incorporated areas. So that could be complicated. I'm not sure if we can do that.
Chris Horn will help us know, right?
But we end up with a decision made at county-wide to the county health department, which means that we would have to work within the city of Vancouver.
All we're asking, all the Board of Health would be requiring is the reporting to animal control of rabies vaccinations that have occurred at any countywide veterinarian. We would not then have any enforcement authority inside those jurisdictions as
for
anything. All I would do would be to take that information and give it to Battleground, who may choose to act upon it or not.
So, for county health, it's only reporting of the rabies.
Correct.
Vaccinations.
Countywide.
Correct.
That, may I make a comment? That might be a really good idea, because there are veterinary clinics inside the Battleground city limits, which I work at. And if you don't have jurisdiction over them through the county health department, then you wouldn't have jurisdiction over them, right?
No, it's my understanding the Board of Health does have jurisdiction countywide,
right,
including inside jurisdictions. All I'm saying is that all the Board of Health would, I'll say, enact is the requirement for those inside non-animal control jurisdictions to give the information to animal control, who would then turn around and give it to those jurisdictions for them to use as they so see fit.
Right.
But we would still keep it in file here, of course.
Correct.
Just in duplicate.
Correct.
Okay. I like the idea of the allowing, inviting pre-enterprise businesses to be able to advertise and whatever that kind of opportunity is, so that that provides voluntary extra revenue into the county, where the business, I would assume, would do that mainly because they think it's good for them and they pay us, and that's good for us. So everybody wins. I like that.
Mr. Chair, I don't know what we're talking about.
So in part of the discussion we're having here about Title VIII amendments, I'm asking that you include a section where I was referencing we stole the language from King County that allows us to I'm going to turn to the actual page. It's page 6. Where we can receive revenue and place it into the county fund via advertising, sponsorships, maybe even naming rights. I received, my program received a brand new truck yesterday, and we're quite happy to say it has a lot of white space on it that we can use to place the advertisements if we go down that road.
Where will these be placed?
So,
not you can place them, but
so, well, we could put them on our website, which is a common thing these days. We could place them on the sides of our 4 trucks that drive around all day. Similar to like a
bus.
C-Tran bus has a IQ Credit Union advertisement on the side of it. We would have something similar on the sides of our trucks. I've got quite a white sheet that I've been working with Mike Westerman on in purchasing as to what would be allowed and what wouldn't, and we actually spell that out here in the code, so no false or misleading or deceptive advertising, nothing that promotes anything unlawful.
Yeah, I did.
All of that.
I did see this and read it, but the concept of where it would be offered is what I didn't know.
Yeah.
my instinct is I don't like it. I don't want our purpose or intent to be confused. And I know you are the innovation guy.
Business.
It, to me, because we're county agency, it almost could imply endorsement, or I mean, we can say it doesn't imply
right.
that.
Well, you've heard me discuss over the years the budget constraints of this program, and so we're trying to be creative on bridging the gap. And I will throw one statistic at you that you can sleep on between now and the public hearing. This program began in 1974 and did include the city of Vancouver. We had 4 officers at that time. Since then, the population has grown 300%, threefold, and we still have 4 officers. We're woefully understaffed. We're running into a large sick leave, a lot of overtime, and my staff are beat up. I'm trying to do everything I can to raise awareness and revenues for this program, and this is a very viable means of doing so.
I want to first say that your drivers are wonderful, and the people that...
I'm making the microphone, I can't hear you.
The drivers are wonderful, and the people who do this work that are out on the street are responsive, and they do a wonderful job. So I want to say that. And with a 300% increase in population and a 0% increase in officers that are taking care of the problems, that does not seem feasible to me. So those are sort of bats on the ground here. How much revenue do we think this would generate, and how would the revenue be used? That's the other thing that I would want to know. And those questions are still up in the air, right?
Yes, and the contract that we would have with whoever the vendors, I'll use plural there, would perhaps spell that out. Speaking with our attorney just this morning about this, he too has concerns that restrictions may be placed upon, let's say it's Les Schwab that gives us $10,000, that we want to make sure that Les Schwab does not pigeonhole us on how the funds may be spent. For my way of thinking, it would all go towards payroll. That would be my and I believe my staff would heartily agree with me, which the money should go towards payroll. We are looking for something that is sustainable, otherwise the budget office will wisely not allow me to hire anybody, because we don't want to turn around and fire anybody when the perhaps the sponsorship or the revenue from this stream dissipates.
So I might run out of time, so I'm going to be very brief. I don't think we, during the big crunch, I think we're down to 2 officers or something like that.
We were up to 7, and then we went down to, I think it was something like 3.6. We had 4 at 8.8. Yeah.
Then we came back and we saw that. We come back and we added those back in.
Correct.
But one of the things that we did do, what enabled to do that is that we went on the internet and allowed licensing, and we went out and increased the fees. If I recall right, we doubled the license from the year previously. And when the population grows, so does the animal population. So I assume that we also will have more licenses every year as the population grows. It would help us make a decision like that if we see what that ratio is, what you made in. And the other thing I have problems with advertising on a law enforcement vehicle. I think it's, I don't think we would put advertisements on the deputy's cars any more than we would to identify our animal control as a deputy. With that authority there too, so I'm mixed feelings there. It's like getting stopped, Tom Duncan trucking on the side of the enforcement vehicle. Can may not get, I mean, don't want to advertise either because it could be a rebuttal back on the kind of business. So.
My staff is in favor of this as long as I don't allow daisies and unicorns and other sort of advertisements to be on the side of the trucks that would anyway diminish, like you're saying, their law enforcement. I do believe that we can have it done professionally, discreetly, and in a manner that doesn't diminish their stature.
I'm curious when it comes to the advertising part of it as well. It could be a bit like running a small business. That is that there's a certain amount of overhead to be able to process that, maintain it, collect the fees, and the advertising, whatever it is going to be sold. So we want to make sure that, I assume that they would pay as you go. We would invest in it with the hopes that it would have some return on that investment, but that the investment would pay for itself as it went.
So I'll use Les Schwab again. We would enter into a contract with Les Schwab and receive compensation and an agreement as to what, where on the vehicle or where in our marketing material and how long the advertisement would be displayed and what the advertisement would say. That would be certainly at our discretion as well.
Sure. And on your side, that's extra work that you're not doing now. And so it's really a question of it's going to be profitable enough, how much overhead is going to be involved. So that business kind of overhead, I assume there's discretion there to make sure that it's return on investment is appropriate. You said this is from King County, they've implemented it there. How successful has it been there? Did they have any individuals, any staff that they've added that handles that processing?
I haven't contacted them on that in that manner. We were just more interested in the language they were using and how they derived it. I can certainly get that information for you.
It would be good. I expect that there would be a well to draw from when it comes to insight, because if they're the first ones in the state, or a major one in the state that has done that, I expect their experience, they've been the guinea pig, they've experimented, they know what not to do, what's more profitable than others. To gain that insight so we can seal their best ideas. Great.
All right.
So it sounds like we have still a little bit of unfinished business and decision making. We're making up.
So
are we to the end, or did we have more?
Really, there's the only other item that I would ask that you be aware of is on page 28, I hope it's on your page 28, it's 819.010 enforcement, and that is where we're adding language that helps our officers with obstruction that unfortunately we have to deal with in the field.
Yeah.
So if you might take a moment in the next days and read that language as well. So it's 819.010 number 2 and number 3.
Okay. And if we could go back to page 23 real quickly. I'm sorry, page 24, the dangerous, potentially, the definition for potentially dangerous dog. Is this added language, or is this refined language? I remember that was a big deal in Vancouver, is how you...
Are you referring to 818.040 number 1?
818.040 determination.
Right, and under number 1 is where there's language added.
Yes, and that's revised language.
It's added language, and probable cause has become. I'm going to try to. So two things here. we're trying to follow case law that has occurred up in Pierce, and also some local cases that we've been trying to deal with. And anytime that we can further refine the definitions of these, we're finding this to our advantage. Do you have any comments on that one?
No, it is because if there's a dispute. Frequently there's a dispute.
Yes.
So this refines the language.
Yes.
Probable cause as well as a preponderance of the evidence, both.
Okay, thank you.
I read through this, and I'm good with virtually all of it. I've got one question on page 34. I'm wondering if that definition of a frivolous appeal is under the heading, under the parentheses 10, assessment. The last sentence there says, a frivolous appeal is an appeal that cannot be supported by any rational argument of the law or facts. And I'm curious if that's a standard definition that legalese, because I can imagine in cases where attorneys would be arguing and I can say, well, I can think of a few, one or two things that pull out of the air, but it was never part of any, what was actually argued. I wonder if that would be the right term, cannot versus is, or something like that.
It's also for the hearings officer to make that determination. So, if the hearings officer made a determination that it could not be supported by a rational argument of law or facts, as opposed to like an individual animal control officer.
I see that's the intent, but I can imagine an attorney saying, well, even though it's not that in that case it maybe was not, so somebody can come up with an argument and say, well, I can come up with something that had nothing to do with what was actually argued. I don't know. I just want to make sure that I assume that Chris Horn has gone through this language and they're good with all the terminology and the definitions.
Bill Richardson, yes.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah, he's our confidence in Bill. Yeah.
So the examiner that we have is an attorney as well, so they're trained.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. Good. They know better than us.
That's a question I didn't have time to answer or ask. Is he a judge or an attorney?
An attorney.
All right. So given there are some areas that came into question this afternoon. It is this afternoon. How do we want to proceed?
I want to review it and study it for myself.
Tom, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
I wanted to review it and study it in more detail myself, and maybe bring up other discussion at the board meeting or whatever.
Okay.
There's a lot of unanswered questions. I ran out of time and I have other appointments.
So did we earmark the areas that maybe we indicated that we were somewhat distressed by?
Yes, but I'm not clear on how I can help you get past that.
I marked
it. I'm more than willing to help. I just don't know where we go from here if we continue down the path towards a public hearing, or do we have another work session, or what do we do?
Well, I would be glad to, on any areas that I potentially object to, I would be glad to reread this and come and talk to you.
You're more
than
welcome.
Not take up an enormous amount of your time, but communicate with you directly, and then we can see if I can get past it. Or if it would be a sticking point for me.
Okay.
And I've read through it all. I'm good with it all. I'm not suggesting any changes. It sounds like the path forward would be not another work session, but basically one-on-ones with my fellow colleagues here to be able to get those questions answered. And if there be any proposed changes at that point, then you could submit them and moving forward. But whatever that appropriate process is, and you can determine it, whether that through be the Board of Health or through our BOCC hearing, I would be happy to with my colleagues to get up to speed and move it forward with. If there's room to refine it, I'm certainly open to that.
Okay, but I want to say I am up to speed, but I still will follow up.
conversation. Wonderful. Looking forward to it.
I mean that as a compliment. The up to speed bar is higher than it is now.
Okay. Okay. All right. We good?
Sounds like it. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.